How's it going, gentlemen? This is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications coming at you again with another audio interview. Today, I've got a new friend of mine. His name is Dr. Stanley Siegel, and he is a psychotherapist and the author of the upcoming book, Your Brain on Sex, How Smarter Sex Can Change Your Life. And this is really an interesting book because I think there's a lot of things on our minds as guys with regard to sex, you know, not only what we want to achieve sexually, but also our fears, some things we're maybe even a little bit guilty about thinking or feeling, and sometimes we want to know if we're the only guys feeling it or whether it's normal. And I thought it would be a fascinating conversation with Stanley here to talk about some of those things since he's a world-class expert at it. He's coming to us from New York. Stanley, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, I would love to, first of all, talk about this idea you have of intelligent lust and some of the processes that you teach regarding how our brains actually focus on sex and sexual desires, because I think that's really fascinating, and I think the best place to start would be for you to just give us a background on that.
I will. First of all, I should say that I know that as men, we're generally not trained to think very much about sex. Mostly we're trained to just do it. So the process of intelligent lust that I describe in Your Brain on Sex is a process of learning to deeply explore what our true desires are, where they come from, what they mean, so that we can not only learn to understand ourselves better, but we can learn to choose partners with whom we're sexually compatible and even otherwise compatible. Partners who we can not only have great sex with, but who we can trust, respect, and feel generous towards.
Wow, that's fascinating. You talk a little bit about defining chemistry and the reasons why we feel that with some people and not others, regardless of how visually sexually attractive we may think they are. Can you describe that to us?
I can. Chemistry is when we read the characteristics and traits of a person, and those characteristics and traits resonate with our deepest desires and fantasies. When that happens, when those things match, we have what's called chemistry.
So it really goes deeper than something visual. You're feeling like this is a person who I could not only be sexual with, but who will help me fulfill my sexual fantasies and us hers.
Exactly.
You talk about at length what your sexual fantasies actually mean. And this is where I want to dive right in and say, look, you know, some of us as guys, we're sort of afraid to tell women what our fantasies are because we're afraid that we're either weird or we're going to scare them away. You know, I know a lot of times you guys who are in the psychoanalysis field don't like to define the term normal, but how can you put some of us at ease and kind of level set us a little bit to let us know that we're normal red-blooded guys with the way we think?
Well, I think there, you know, normal is a relative concept and it's changed over the centuries as culture has changed. So there's very little now that we shouldn't think of as normal. By that I mean is that we all have unique personalities and unique histories, and our fantasies and desires grow out of those histories. So they're particular to us. Many of us share some of that in common, some of the same fantasies and desires, but mostly we put to it our own unique style or theme that we may not necessarily even be that conscious of. I think the important thing here, and the difficult thing to appreciate, is that our fantasies and our desires usually grow out of some unresolved conflict or some unmet need that we eroticize during the heightened sexuality of adolescence and young adulthood. Our minds convert painful feelings associated with these past events and turns them into pleasurable ones in an attempt to help us heal from those events. So just like the body produces immunities to help us heal from wounds, the mind produces fantasies and desires to help us heal from childhood conflicts. As we grow up, these become encoded in our sexual behavior. For instance, if we grow up in a family in which we're deeply criticized, by the time we reach young adulthood, to cope with those feelings of humiliation or guilt or shame that was instilled on us through that criticism, we may actually sexualize them, encoding them in the stories of our fantasies and desires. We may begin to seek out sex even in which we are equivalently shamed or even verbally humiliated. It's our way of turning those painful feelings from childhood into pleasurable experiences by using sex.
So how should we talk to a woman about what our fantasies are and maybe encourage her to tell us about hers?
Well, I think that's an essential step in dating. And I think once we get over feelings of shame and guilt for whatever fantasies we might have, I think that we need to then have the conversation probably pretty early on in a dating experience, because what we're aiming for here is true sexual compatibility. We're aiming to couple with someone who really respects and appreciates our desires, and also whose desires may complement our own. So I think we should have very specific and direct conversations, just like the ones we might have about any other aspect of our lives. We may want to find out a lot about a woman's family background or her education or who her friends are. I think we have to treat sex in the same way. Now, this may sound a little creepy, and a woman may perceive it as that, but that's not the kind of woman you're necessarily going to want to be with, because the ultimate satisfaction is not only going to come from the sexual compatibility, but from the experience of building trust and respect and generosity with a woman. In any case, in the conversation, we need to get to a point in which we're comfortable in asking pretty difficult and deep questions like, what is your best sexual experience? Maybe even what was missing from past sexual experience? And what would be your ideal experience? So in that way, we can guide a conversation into finding out the truth about who someone is. All too often, 9 years into her marriage, sex stops, we get bored, and that's generally because we haven't really gotten to know our partner sexually. Maybe we've acted out, but we've never really had conversations, and we don't know what their deepest desires are, and often we don't even know our own. So this process helps facilitate that and gives us a little bit of insurance that down the road, we're not going to discover some desire that's totally unexpected or get bored in our relationships.
Another thing that's interesting about your writings is you believe you can define a specific time when it's right to actually act out your sexual fantasies. Could you elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah. I think it's often right to act out our sexual fantasies. And I think that's only because through this process, we learn to truly understand what those fantasies are and what they mean. I believe that these sexual desires are part of our healing process if, under the right circumstances, we can act them out with someone with whom we're compatible and someone who will admire and appreciate our fantasies, then I think we can continue the healing process.
So in other words, as soon as you feel comfortable expressing your fantasies to a woman and her expressing hers to you, it's pretty much okay once you realize that you've accepted each other's fantasies to go ahead and get on with the business of acting them out a little bit.
I think it is. I think what we can do is set up the circumstances in which we should act them out, meaning what exactly the stories are of our fantasies that we do want to act out, how they should happen, what the limits of that are, so that we have the consent and the boundaries to what we do. And our partner feels as free as we do in expressing herself and making the experience one in which our body, our mind, and our spirit connect.
I would say that there's probably, well, I don't even know about probably, I think definitely, because I'm looking back on my own personal experience, a difference between understanding and appreciating and respecting someone's fantasies and being a willing accomplice to helping them plan it out.
That's right. I think it's really taking it a step further. And I think sometimes we do talk about our fantasies with our partners without actually understanding what they mean and where they come from. But what I'm suggesting is that we do plan it, and that part of the planning process allows us really to develop this intimate bond with a partner that goes just beyond the simple sexual encounter. It's a bond that involves, as I said earlier, trust and respect. And interestingly, I think that kind of sexual communication will also translate into communication about other aspects of our lives. If we're building this kind of important intimacy with someone around sex, it's going to be a lot easier to have conversations about other important subjects. We already have the foundation for it. And here we've used sex to get to that place.
I think that's interesting. Let me go ahead and give you an example from my own life. I was dating this gal, and I thought she was terrific. Obviously, this is a long time before I met Emily. And one of her sexual fantasies was her dressing up like a nun and me dressing up like a priest and me just totally, like, attacking her and us having this wild, riotous sex dressed up that way. And I thought that was a little bit beyond what I was comfortable partaking in. And so, obviously, we didn't do that. Was the problem mine because I wasn't open-minded enough, or are we just not sexually compatible at a real deep level, or something else? What's going on there?
Well, a couple things. I think, first of all, someone who wants to dress as a nun is probably someone who feels pretty guilty about sex. And the only way she might be able to have it and enjoy it, or at least make it pleasurable, is when it's kind of against her will, so that she's not initiating it. In this case, you know, if you, as the priest, applied force, and she has nothing to do with it in a sense, and she doesn't have to feel guilty about enjoying sex. So I think that's one of the dynamics that happens in acting out. But I think to your point about incompatibility, there are times, perhaps like that one, in which we are incompatible, in which we may not want to do something that we don't particularly feel comfortable with. And then, as probably you did, you make the decision what to do about the relationship. And I think different things can happen. I think sometimes a couple will decide, well, you know, we really are incompatible, and frankly, you know, I don't care deeply enough about you to give you that kind of pleasure. So it's best we part. Some couples do other things. Some couples will say, well, let me give you that. I really care about you. I deeply value how you feel. I want to give you that pleasure. And so despite the fact that it may not be exactly comfortable for us, we go along with it and do our best to give pleasure to our partner. Some couples do something also interesting, and that is that couples who feel that they're completely incompatible, their desires are so vastly different, and do really care about and love each other, might decide to open their relationship. They might both come to the conclusion that they don't want to deprive their partner of ever having sex again because their desire doesn't match his. So some of these couples will navigate a relationship in which sex can happen with other partners under usually pretty set rules. So I've had the experience of working with couples who have done all those alternatives.
Well, a couple minutes ago, you actually shed some light on something that I think confounds guys to no end. And I don't want to just gloss over it. And that's this whole idea of women feeling guilty about sex, therefore if they feel like it's forced on them a little bit, that makes it okay. I think you've just explained in many ways this ever mysterious idea of women having rape fantasies.
Exactly. I think rape fantasies are among the most common fantasies among women, but we have to keep in mind the context of that
sure.
Women aren't particularly trained to enjoy sex. There's a lot of guilt about women being sexually free. And in many of our families, there are religious restrictions or educational ones that also lead to women feeling they're not entitled to sex or that sex is something that's shameful and shouldn't be enjoyed. But exactly what we do, we convert that guilt, just as I was describing before, and we make it somehow pleasurable. We eroticize it so that the way that a woman can enjoy that is if she's raped in her fantasy or acted out in a sexual encounter with a partner, so that she doesn't have to feel the guilt because she can say to herself, I'm not responsible for that.
So just to make it perfectly clear, it's not that we should go around raping women against their will. It's when there is safety and security within that relationship, like I talk about with these guys all the time, that really does define or explain the reason why women just want guys to take them sometimes. And I think that's powerful.
I think that's powerful. I think also, though, that we don't usually give women enough credit for, or we don't tend to think that women have more complex fantasies. But what I've discovered over my 36 years of practice, that women's fantasies are often as complicated as men's, meaning that they're also extremely original and grow out of their histories. They're less likely to talk about it and engage it because of the shame surrounding sex that women inherit. But you can bet that many women, if they really think about it, will have pretty elaborate stories about what brings them to an orgasm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fundamental here for men and women. Think about it for a second. Ask the question to yourself, what do I really think about that makes me climax? What's really going on in my mind? What are the thoughts? What are the images? What's happening? One of the things that I've discovered is that often we're much more in our thoughts than we are in our bodies or even the sexual encounter we're having. A lot of times what makes us climax is what we're thinking about.
I think that's incredibly insightful. I think that was incredibly intuitive. A lot of times we think, okay, a woman's body part, seeing her naked, is going to really just turn us on, and then we get naked with her and we can't even get a hard on. Or she may be performing oral sex on us and we just can't come and we can't come and we can't come and we don't know what the heck's wrong with us. Right. And then she just kind of moves back a little bit, raises one eyebrow, bites her lower lip, wrinkles her nose, and then we explode.
Exactly.
And that, who knew, right? But that is that expression of femininity right there at that very moment, or something she might say
exactly
in the heat of the moment, is just what really turns us on. Or she may have painted her toes a certain way, or she may move her fingers a certain way, and it's just that just ignites her masculinity with her femininity in a way that we didn't even really guess. And so, you know, this is all part of what you're talking about in terms of intelligent lust, and I just think it's really deep and fascinating. I want, in closing, just to ask you a question, because I think a lot of guys really worry about this and they wonder about it, and you seem like the kind of expert who could really shed some light on this question. Guys worry because we want variety and we get into a monogamous sexual relationship with a woman and we fear having sex with this one woman for the rest of our lives. And maybe even sometimes when we're having sex with her, we fantasize about another woman in our minds. And that causes some guilt because we feel like we're cheating on her, but we wouldn't dare tell her that. And meanwhile, she's just enjoying the sexual experience. But what's really causing us to get even hornier than usual is a fantasy in our mind that she doesn't know is playing out. How normal is that? Can it be cured? Should it be cured? Should we be more open talking to our woman about it? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's completely normal. I think it's very, very common. I think particularly for men to imagine having sex with another woman or even imagine having sex with his partner and another woman. These are among the most common fantasies. And not only are they common, they're in some way desirable in the sense that it allows us to continue to feel sexually excited in an experience. I think the problem is that we don't really appreciate that so much that goes on around sex is in our minds. It's about our brains. And so rather than denying that, those fantasies or policing them, I think we need to honor them and enjoy them. I do believe, and this may be taking things a step further, that we can get to the place where we can possibly engage our partner in conversations about these things so that they can be out in the open and they can be experimented with, and we can work through the jealousies or rivalries that a partner may feel because we have a strong bond with them. And we can then, you know, add that element of fantasy to our sexual experience so that there's always variety.
Hey, honey, could you put this blonde wig on for me?
Exactly. Exactly. And some women might really enjoy being someone else.
Excellent. Fantastic. This has been a fascinating conversation that, as so often is the case, Stanley took so many twists and turns that I didn't expect. So I want to let the guys know about your book. It's called Your Brain on Sex, How Smarter Sex Can Change Your Life. And you've just seen a glimpse of how that might be able to be the case for you guys. I've set up a special URL. That's www.deservewhatyouwant.com/Stanley, Stanley. There you can learn more about Stanley and what he's been thinking and what he's up to. Pretty cutting edge stuff, and perhaps even check out his book. Dr. Stanley Siegel, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a brilliant conversation.
Thank you so much, Scott.
And until I talk to you guys again real soon, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.